Hello and welcome to the CFO Playbook podcast. My name's David McClelland. I'm a journalist and broadcaster. I cover business, technology and leadership. And here on the CFO Playbook, I get under the skin of how world-class finance leaders from across various industries execute strategy, leverage technology, lead effectively and much, much more. And in today's show, we speak with the CFO of a fast-growing UK unicorn that's racing to disrupt the used car marketplace about knowing when to hit the accelerator or when to pump the brakes.
I think many CFOs in smaller organisations often end up as the chief everything else officer. There's very few markets in the UK with the same size and stability as the used car market. We are completely platform. We don't buy vehicles, we don't hold inventory, we don't own any infrastructure. And that's a big part of what sets us apart. I certainly didn't start in finance, I started in engineering. So I didn't do so much with car engines, I did quite a lot with jet engines in my degree. Oh, we've definitely stayed in our lane.
Okay.
We feel like we're still early on the start of our journey and there is loads and loads of road ahead of us. I love the driving analogy, let's see how far we can stretch it.
Please. I'm going to take away an awful lot from our conversation today, but that one there, I can guarantee I'll be using several times this week. A reminder that the CFO Playbook is here every month with exclusive interviews and insights from world-class finance leaders. So do subscribe and listen back through our extensive back catalogue. And don't be afraid to get in touch, as many of you do. Your suggestions really do help to shape our shows. Right, let's meet today's guest.
This episode of the CFO Playbook is brought to you by Soldo. Trusted by over 25,000 organizations across 31 countries, Soldo combines pre-programmed cards, an intuitive app, and a powerful management platform to replace manual processes with efficiency and control. To find out more or to book a demo, visit soldo.com.
Liz Kistruck, CFO at Motorway. Thank you for joining us here on the CFO Playbook.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Tell me, whereabouts are you joining us from today and how's your work week been so far?
I'm in our London office. I come into the office a couple of times a week. I'm always in on a Tuesday. We always have an executive meeting. We have a trading meeting and sort of our general, lots of our business rhythm happens on a Tuesday. I really enjoy being in the office and the energy you get from being around and talking with everyone.
I think it's that new world that we live in, and it feels more than 5 years after that pandemic thing happened. But I guess we're in a different work rhythm now, aren't we? You know, it might be Finance Friday or Marketing Monday or whatever it is, these kind of set days in the week. And we've also found the ability to do different types of work in the office when we're with our colleagues and then different types of work when we're working from home. Is that something that you found?
Absolutely. And actually, I've been working in a hybrid mode for more than 10 years. So long before It was cool and pre-COVID. But what's really interesting is the hybrid model has changed. So pre-COVID, when I was sort of doing it on my own, I'd have one day a week at home that I would keep for like busy work. And I would come into the office, I would drop my bag off somewhere, and I'd spend all my time face-to-face in meetings and in meetings and doing meeting work. I actually find now, and it was a conscious transition I made during COVID, was the face-to-face time in the office is for the occasional conversations. And so if I'm locked up in meeting rooms all day, I'm not actually available to have that. So I try to prioritize office time to actually just doing desk work, because then they're much more flexible. Someone comes in and says, oh, Liz, can I just ask you about this? I always make a point of making a cup of tea between every single meeting, I do drink a lot of tea, but not because I need the tea, but it's just another opportunity to be available to have those occasional conversations when people are around. And then my days at home are back-to-back Zoom calls. It's just meeting with people and doing meeting type work, which is, it's 180 shift from where I started, but actually I think is much more effective.
Well, I'm very grateful that you've taken time away from your water cooler and tea breaks to chat with us today on the CFO Playbook. Let's talk about Motorway first of all, though. I'm conscious that we have a very international audience on this show. In a nutshell, explain what Motorway does and perhaps what stage it's at right now on its journey.
So Motorway is a UK business. We are the UK's largest consumer to business used car marketplace. So we connect private individuals who are selling their vehicle with car dealers who want to buy it. And we do it through daily online auctions. And then we facilitate for dealers to collect, inspect, and pay for the vehicles that they won. We're a platform model. Our founders sort of invented this idea of being able to do used cars consumer to dealers because they saw it as a massive marketplace, a massive market that was very much offline, undisrupted, but full of pain points, both for dealers and for sellers. So our three founders, Tom, Harry, Alex, they founded Motorway back in 2017 to bring this offline market into the online world. Saw massive acceleration through COVID, particularly because dealers really engaged with the online model because they had to. But once they experienced it, they really understood the benefits of it and have continued to engage with it. So Motorway raised a Series C at the end of November 2021, which was when we reached our unicorn status. We got to that $1 billion valuation.
And that's in 4 years. 4 years or so. I wrote down here unicorned in 2021. I don't know if that's a verb that I can use, but you know what I mean. But that's really quite quick. And that just shows the value of the business model, of the market, and of the need that there clearly was to join consumers selling their vehicles with dealers wanting to basically bid on those vehicles. It's shown that it was the right fit, the right product at the right time to get that unicorn so very quickly.
Exactly. I really appreciate our founders were very thoughtful. They had done several ventures before this. So they're very thoughtful about what was the next one going to be. Where could they find a market and a problem space where they could build a generational business that was really going to disrupt and then persist for the long term? And the used car market is enormous in the UK. It's nearly 100 billion. It's incredibly stable, but it is full of pain points. And up until now, probably wasn't ready for online disruption, but various things like we're very dependent on the quality of cameras in iPhones. And probably before 2017, the camera quality wasn't sufficient for people to be able to take high quality photos of their vehicles at home. So there was definitely a timing moment. COVID really did help the adoption journey, but I really believe the value that we're bringing into the transaction is the secret of Motorway. It is just better for everybody. So we're not just a marketplace that is sort of arbitraging and making things a little bit better by doing it online. We're actually fundamentally changing the value chain for the better to create value for our users.
So as we record, that's 4 years ago since that Series C in late 2021. What can you say about where you are right now as we record at the end of 2025?
We're at a really exciting juncture. So we've been investing that Series C incredibly carefully over the last 3 years. We've built a brand. If you're ever in London, you'll see the Motorway taxis driving around. We spent a lot of time building consumer brand. We spent a lot of time continuing to invest in the product, particularly in the dealer side and the tools that dealers need in order to be able to buy at scale. And we're very close to getting ourselves back to that magical, profitable moment.
Your role there, though, as CFO, if there's one thing that we've learned on this podcast, it's that no two CFOs have the same role. So how do you summarize what your remit is at Motorway right now?
I think many CFOs in smaller organizations often end up as the chief everything else officer. and that is certainly something that I've seen. So my current portfolio, and it does shift, is I have the finance team, obviously. That includes strategy. There's a payments operations team that reports to me. I also oversee legal, people, and some of the commercial analytics team. So quite a broad scope. But I really like it. And what I find is being outside of just that narrow finance pillar is I have so much more perspective that I can bring both to finance, but to each of those different divisions by being able to share the context that I've got. It's really valuable for me and for all of those teams.
And you touched on it a moment ago about the opportunity that Motorway has exploited in the UK. But how do you regard the used car sector at the moment? Because it's not all been rosy for everybody. We've seen some high profile falls from grace lately in this space. There's, you know, turbulence, uncertainty from tariffs with new vehicles and so on. So the kind of broader picture, how does it feel for you?
We feel really positive on the used car sector. As I said, like our founders were really careful about picking their next sector. They're not traditional petrol heads, you know, with a long history in the car industry. There's very few markets in the UK with the same size and stability as the used car market. Headlines often grabbed by new car market, which is much more vulnerable to economic conditions and other macro factors. But the used car market has grown steadily for each of the past 11 consecutive quarters. It really is quite stable. It's not very profitable. And so that is a definite challenge. But the motorway model, we are completely platform. We don't buy vehicles. We don't hold inventory. We don't own any infrastructure. And that's a big part of what sets us apart. Because we don't have that balance sheet risk, we're able to be much more agile. And we really believe that the car dealership network in the UK is the backbone of the used car market. And so working in partnership with them is the way to drive value. And we do that by helping connect them directly with the private seller who's got the vehicle that they want. Without motorway, it's often a much more complicated journey for that vehicle to get from that seller through a trade-in dealer, perhaps through an auction house, to finally get to the end dealer who needs to retail it. And we just by collapsing that, we make life easier for everybody.
You spoke about the founders at Motorway not coming from an automotive background there. Neither do you necessarily, although maybe your education does lean into that. I don't know. But you've worked in a variety of businesses before you came into Motorway. How do you summarize your own journey to this point?
Well, I think everybody likes to think of themselves as unique and non-traditional. And I certainly didn't start in finance. I started in engineering. So I didn't do so much with car engines. I did quite a lot with jet engines in my degree. And then I left and worked as a manufacturing consultant in factories. And I worked in factories that I knew nothing about, yet was still delivering amazing outcomes, which really helped me learn about problem solving and how to approach seemingly impossible problems, how to lead change, and how to have an unshakable belief that there is a better way and to just keep stepping forward. I then switched into finance, still in factories, and specifically making paint, which is not the most exciting industry in the world.
Okay.
but working in factories in finance, especially in the UK, is incredibly grounding on cost management and the level of discipline that you have to have in cost control and what's possible if you have the right mindset. So I did that for a while. And then I was lucky, maybe smart, probably lucky, to join Expedia quite early. And I grew up in that company as it was growing up. I witnessed and delivered a lot of the scale-up journey there and got to work with some incredibly smart and, you know, amazing people, which really taught me a lot outside of finance. So I got to be CFO of Hotels.com. That taught me about products and it taught me about consumer brands. I worked in and ran all of the marketing analytics team for all of their consumer brands and learned about marketing science and measurement. And then I was CFO of the B2B business, which was all of the supply contracts, hotels, airlines, but also there was a B2B sales division that was selling white label APIs. So I learned about tech sales. It was really great to be seeing huge scale, but also the push. How do you continue to drive at speed when you are at scale? And just, you know, truly excellent grounding for then moving into other marketplaces.
Well, yes, as you did. Let's fast forward to Motorway, though. Well, what was it that drew you from Hotels.com, Expedia, big global presence operation? What then drew you to a UK-based startup scale-up? Are you a startup or are you a scale-up at Motorway at the moment? There's a question.
That is a good question. I don't know. I call us a scale-up. Once you've been, what do you call it, unicorned?
Yeah.
Yes, I think you can't be a startup still there.
In terms of what then brought you to Motorway, what was it about that? Was there a common thread? Was there something in terms of your own journey that you wanted to see if it would flourish within you, or some new value that you thought you could bring to a different operation?
I mean, I've always been hungry for learning. So I was definitely looking for a new learning opportunity. And what I wanted to find was somewhere that I could bring together all of the experience that I've got. How do you bring in consumer marketing, product, cost management, B2B, which led me to a marketplace. I went to a fashion marketplace first, and then came to Motorway. I was initially unexcited at the Motorway opportunities. You know, it's these three guys and they're doing this thing in used cars. I was like, that doesn't sound.
Yep.
I'm working in fashion. But actually, as I really dug into it and got really excited by the proposition that they are building, and the care and the thought about having real substance behind the business model and not just doing something that everybody else is doing, but doing it in a techie way. But really being a disruptor was really attractive to me.
So you were CFO number one there at Motorway, I think. In terms of then coming into that job and establishing the processes, maybe not almost from scratch, because I'm sure there were processes there, but what was your journey to establishing the CFO office, if you like, and what have maybe been your biggest learnings so far in that regard?
Yeah, so I was the first CFO at Motorway. I was the first CFO at my previous place as well.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so I'm a second time first CFO, if that makes sense. It's an interesting challenge stepping into a role that hasn't existed before. The thing I found was everybody was terribly excited for me to be joining, but nobody had any idea what it meant to have a CFO come into the building. Motorway had a good finance team before I joined, and that's actually really important. So if you haven't got that first, you have to have a strong finance team because finance is not what a CFO brings. You bring much more of that connection of finance, and from that position and grounding in finance, you then reach across the entire business. I think most people find that CFOs are the right-hand person to the CEO. And I think a lot of that is because we have the same perspective across the whole of the business, and we are thinking about the whole of the business the entirety of the time. Whereas often other members and peers on the leadership team, you know, they have, you know, their sector, which is their area of expertise, whereas, you know, we're looking across the whole business. And I really enjoy that opportunity to be curious about the whole of the business, to use finance as a diagnostic to where is something working and we should be leaning in, where are things not delivering what we expected, and how do we address that? And I think there's sometimes a misconception that the CFO coming in is going to be the chief veto officer. And in fact, when I started at Motorway, there was a journalist who asked one of our marketing team the question, is this the death of marketing at Motorway? Because the misconception is that I'm going to come in and say, stop spending money. I actually think it's the other way around. It's the role of finance, and then it's the role of the CFO based on that finance to help the organization to say, yes, what are the right things we should be doing? And how do we say yes faster and with more confidence so that we can deliver faster? And a tiny part of that is saying no to the distractions. But it's really more about how do we lean in and how do we lean in with confidence? And, you know, in a business like ours at our stage, it's not a straight line. And even if you're generally trending upwards, sometimes it feels like you're on a downturn and you have to have confidence to be able to know we have the right strategy. We are executing well, it is going to work, not to like jerk the organization around all the time. And I think that's a big thing that CFO can bring to an organization.
That's fascinating. And to continue the motoring kind of analogy, metaphor, if you like, I was at an event recently for CISOs, Chief Information Security Officers, and almost similarly in a way to how you describe the CFO office as being perceived as the office of no, that's often seen with information security as well. You cannot install that application. You cannot enable this for security, information security reasons. No, no, no. But curiously, at this event, they invited a Formula One racing car driver, a now retired one, to speak as the keynote at the end of the day. And he spoke very eloquently about the key to going quickly, being knowing when to put your foot on the brakes and knowing when the right time to accelerate is, and actually knowing the right time to extend on what you were just saying, to say no, and then knowing the right time to lean into the turn is absolutely key to, I guess, overtaking the opposition or getting as good a time around the lap as it might be. And that seems as though, particularly where you find yourself right now in a, let's call it a scale up, it's knowing where to make the right investments. It's knowing where to put down the foot on the accelerator and which bits to hold back on, because you can't do everything at once. I'm sure you've got a very ambitious team there who want to do a lot of things, but really focusing that energy, focusing the finance into what you and the CEO strategically decide are the right areas, the right corners to race into, is absolutely key for you. Do you have a framework? Do you have anything that helps you to assess when the right time to brake and the right time to accelerate are?
I think the point is absolutely right, that before you can go fast, you've got to know that you can stop. Like, that is true of whatever medium of transport you're on. And so having the confidence to be able to say no, to be able to do it quickly and with certainty, is critical to being able to go fast. I think the thing for me is, you should lean in and be putting the gas on the slam dunk decisions, because you're right. This organization here is full of super smart people who are very passionate about what we're doing, and they all have great ideas. Like, the list of ideas is enormous. And the first thing that you do is you say, well, you know, put a business case to it. You know, what's the upside going to be? How much is it going to cost? Is it going to wash its face? Nobody has ever presented me a business case that looks like it's going to be loss-making. They all look like a good idea because they are all fundamentally not bad ideas. But there is a massive tax to the organization of doing any one thing. And if you're doing multiple things, that compounds and it slows you down and it makes it harder to change. And things get misconstrued as to why we're doing things. And, you know, communication gets much harder and everybody gets busier and fatigued. And there's a huge tax on things. That is very hard to price into your business case. So the best thing in the world is to just do the slam dunks, do the business cases that are an absolute no-brainer, because it doesn't matter how much tax that comes with that idea, it's still going to be massively positive. Whereas if it's a bit more marginal and it just about breaks even on paper, it's probably not going to be that in reality. So just look for the slam dunks, do the great things, and just leave all the good things for later.
All the different sporting analogies popping out now, slam dunks, racing corners and all sorts. And then looking back to your experience at Expedia, how do you reflect on the comparative challenges and opportunities of working for a startup and scale up as you are versus the processes, but versus what it brings when you are working within a larger organization? What have you discovered from List and Motorway about the great things about working at a startup, a scale up, and maybe some of the things where, yeah, this is one of the challenges that you just got to take in your stride?
I mean, one of the great things about working at a scale up is we just move so much faster. And because we are smaller than, you know, an enormous company like Expedia or Dulux Paints, where I was before, it's much easier to see across the whole thing and for many more people to be connected across the whole organization. The challenge that comes with that, though, is twofold. First of all, we've come from a stage when a lot of people working in this office here today remember when they were 20 people all in one room together and everybody's sitting around one enormous table and you're all talking about everything all of the time. So everybody is 100% informed about what is going on. And that is impossible to replicate when you get larger. But that mental model and that habit is still there. So trying to build the communication and the mechanisms and the explicit official channels and making those work instead of all of the historic informal relationships that existed and remembering to make sure that we keep positively communicating is a thing it has to be an always on muscle of like, have we remembered to communicate that? That's a good idea. We're definitely going to do it. Have we remembered to tell everybody? Have we remembered to tell everybody why? And that's really important because in big organizations, you have a huge institutional knowledge of what we're doing, why, where we're going. And it's going to take us 3 to 5 years to get there because we have a 3 to 5 year plan. We're not planning on that horizon. because our context is still changing, because we're still building the business model. We're still disrupting ourselves all the time. And so context is shifting. So we cannot have that kind of institutional just group understanding about where we're going. So again, we have to keep constantly communicating to everybody, oh, this thing has happened, or we've learned this thing, or some other context has changed, therefore we need to pivot. Or this context has changed, however we considered it, we still need to crack on, you know, with plan A. So I just say that communication muscle is the biggest difference, and you have to just be over-indexed on it all the time.
So agility is very much your superpower as a startup scale-up. I guess there is the question, though, about when a scale-up scales to an extent where it could begin to lose that agility. So communication, helping everyone to understand the why, as you say, is kind of one of those ways that a company can maintain its superpower as it grows. What else would you, as Motorway will continue to grow, as you say, what else would you encourage as a leader there to ensure that you are able to keep those superpowers despite the continued scaling?
The obvious one, especially coming from finance, is good process. And I started my career as a process engineer in like physical processes, you know, making things. It has to be process for good. Like in the same way that Motorway is disrupting the car market from this crazy old process into a much more streamlined, high value process, you can do the same internally. Like, so we do planning, we do quarterly business reviews, but they have to deliver value into the, they're not just a tick box exercise. We do them for a reason. We're very clear what the reason is. And we work very hard as a finance team supporting those processes to make them as light touch as possible. So you can still have really high quality conversations, make really clear decisions and communicate those out. But there isn't 6 weeks of preparation work, writing documents and producing slide decks and having pre-meetings to pre-meetings before you get to the meeting. You have to make the process be as efficient as possible. And it's really exciting at the moment because there's tons of tools coming and they're ever evolving that are really facilitating, you know, how we do that in a lighter and lighter touch way, but still get the clear decisions.
Maybe we can touch on tools in a few moments' time, but just continuing that topic of sustainable scaling. And in terms of the kind of core Motorway proposition, as you described it earlier on, it's this platform that connects consumers, people like me who have a car to sell, with verified dealers who are looking for cars to sell on. Would you say that Motorway has largely stayed in its lane, this marketplace, or has it been checking its mirrors and indicating and looking into other lanes as well? Because that's also a common pitfall, the organization that thinks it can do everything. And just because it's really succeeded in one area, it thinks it can succeed in other areas too.
That is definitely a pitfall and one we're very eyes open to. I love the driving analogy. Let's see how far we can stretch it.
Please.
We've definitely stayed in our lane. We feel like we're still early on the start of our journey, and there is loads and loads of road ahead of us in our lane. As we said, like the market is massive. We're still like single digit percent of the market. So we've got tons of motorway ahead of us. The thing that we find is true every time we do look in our mirrors and think, oh, there's another lane over there, should we, you know, try it out, is when you put a cold towel around your head and you think about it, it's always going to return more for us to accelerate on the momentum that we've already built in our existing lane than to try and, like, you know, build that momentum from zero in a different lane. We do keep looking in our mirrors and thinking about, you know, the other lanes that we could move to. But we're very clear that we're only going to do that when we're ready to overtake, because we've got to get our core business to cruising speed first. And we don't feel like we're there yet. But once we've got it there, and we're in a position of stability and strength, that is the right moment to then start thinking about how do we fill out some of these other lanes, rather than just starting to lane hop to try and, you know, find our way through the traffic.
Thank you for humouring my analogy there. No, that really, really did work. Thank you. And I guess it would need to be things that support, I'm going to break away from it right now, but things that support your core users, whether that's the dealers helping them to buy more cars or to find cars easier or whatever it is, or to support the consumers, people like us, making it even easier for us to A, know that you exist, and B, to put our vehicles on the market and feel satisfied with the service that we're getting. That those seem to be, coming back to what you mentioned earlier on, the slam dunks there.
Yeah.
We touched earlier on some of the broader macroeconomic factors affecting the automotive sector, you know, in terms of new vehicles, in terms of what that means for the used vehicle market. But more broadly for a moment, in the UK, where you're based, where we're based, how do you regard the climate for startups and scale-ups at the moment in terms of capital, in terms of tax relief and incentives and so on? And what's been your approach? What have you seen be successful with organizations like Motorway, maybe others as well, if you want to broaden it out, in ensuring that they are able to make the most of what's available or to kind of swerve any of the pitfalls that are there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the UK is a great place to start up. There is tons of talent and opportunity. There's creative people, there's technical people, there's ambition to drive change. You know, we've got good, stable markets. I think the thing that is sad to me is that scaling up is harder. And we don't have a strong track record in this country of UK startups making it all the way to meaningful companies. I mean, in the last 10 years, is probably you can count on one hand, maybe one finger, like the number of companies that have really made that entire journey. It's a long journey. I think we were lobbying a bit on some of the like tax incentives for founders. And, you know, it's a 14-year journey on average, I think, from start to exit. And that is a long time to be, you know, driving and building and trying to create something. And there's just huge opportunity for any number of pressures to trip you up, because for a lot of that time, you are quite vulnerable, especially in the period before you're making profit and generating cash. I mean, capital in the UK is good, is it? And we're very lucky. We have a great set of investors who are supporting us. You know, there's incentives, there are tax reliefs. But it's, you know, it is tricky for a startup and then a scale up to navigate all of regulation and compliance, which is only increasing. It never decreases. And I think particularly if you're disruptive, like, so if you're a tiny business that has this new and disruptive model, by definition, what you're doing is not going to fit into the predetermined rules and boxes about how legislation is currently crafted, but you're tiny. So who wants to talk to you or listen to you? Or you say, like, this archaic rule is, you know, swamping my brilliant business model. And it's very difficult. We have found to really get engagement on that.
And I guess that's where having a really strong conviction, a really good story, really strong experience, or being the agents of change in order to try and persuade the powers that be, the legislators, whatever it is, to create the environment that then allows you, your businesses, and other businesses like you as well, hopefully not too similar, to succeed. That's what I guess what you kind of need. And it sounds to me like what you've got going on there at Motorway right now.
Exactly. And I think what we do is leverage our network. So whether it's my network of other CFOs, where it's our founders with, you know, other founders, whether it's our investors, and we're really quite active in talking to who are other people who are, you know, likely facing, you know, similar challenges. How have they approached it? You know, have they found a resolution to it that we could use? Or can we actually join together to create a bit more voice to be heard on some of these things? It's mostly successful. It's also just very cathartic not to be like on your own banging your head against a problem. If you can find peers who are in the same situation and then support each other through it.
Let's take a quick pit stop to talk about procurement for a moment. And, you know, like everyone else, we are trying to chart the impact that AI and automation are having on finance operations right now. So how is AI changing things for you, particularly as regards to something like procurement where you are?
I mean, AI is endlessly fascinating and exciting for the opportunity it presents. I mean, because Motorway is a platform that doesn't hold inventory, we don't have a huge procurement function because it isn't part of our core value generator. But I think, like all businesses, the finance function really cares about all of our costs. And you know, we've been very keen at adopting all sorts of options to streamline decision making, manage approvals, and then the ongoing life cycle of maintaining these tools and contracts and relationships. So we've adopted tooling that makes it really easy for motorways to request to procure something and get their approval. And they can do that natively in Slack. We, like many companies, run our business through Slack. Yet at the same time, it gives the finance and the legal team and the IT team the structure that they need to be able to see everything that's coming through, you know, track approvals, manage any necessary compliance and control, and minimize just the back office admin, so that from a user's perspective, internal as motorway, it feels like it's fast and slick, yet from a back office perspective, it feels controlled. And I remember someone in a compliance function once described their job to me as, I provide good friction, meaning that by slowing down the processes through overviews and approvals, it naturally weeds out low-level issues, and it also gives you time to, you know, spot or capture any larger issues. And I think that that is a thinking of the past. What AI tools can allow you to do is you can change that concept. You can have governance and control and speed and frictionless process. And so you get the best of both worlds. You can deliver things quickly. Everybody can move fast, yet we all feel entirely safe.
Fascinating. Thank you. Thank you. And yes, good friction is an interesting one. I'm just thinking of rumble strips and speed bumps and things like that. But again, I'll put the metaphors to the side for a moment. Finally, about for this part of the conversation, what are you most looking forward to next for Motorway's next chapter? Here we are at the end of 2025. I know we've kind of spoken about planning, year-long plans, and how difficult it is, particularly when you're the difference between a big company and the 3 and 5 year plans, and then your superpower, the agility. But what are you excited about as you look forward to 2026?
Well, I mean, as a CFO, like getting to profitability is such an enormous milestone for us to reach as a company. And it really feels like going through the looking glass, that, you know, everything looks similar, but is different once we get to the other side of that threshold. So we're very focused on that, and can't describe how excited I am for us to get there.
It's not a destination. I'm sure that there are other places that beyond the kind of profitability ticking the box, but I wish you all the very best of that. So before we wrap up, a couple of questions for you. Here on the CFO Playbook, we speak with a wealth of finance leaders from all around the world and from across many different industries. And we hear so many unique insights and nuggets of knowledge. And we thought, well, what if we had a virtual CFO Playbook into which each month, each episode, we submit a new entry from our guests, a piece of advice that you wish maybe that you were given, or an experience that's helped to shape you, or just a tip that you hope may help fellow finance professionals. So Liz, the book is open. The playbook's right there in front of you. What would your contribution to the CFO Playbook be?
My contribution to the CFO Playbook is this very little phrase that my father taught me. And it is, if it has to be now, it has to be no. That, funnily enough, he told me when we were sitting in the car park at a car dealership as I was trying to buy my first car. So before we walked in, he said, remember, if it has to be now, it has to be no. And it stuck with me because I do remember being highly pressured to say yes to buying this car. And I didn't really want to, but they were, you know, and just because my dad was sitting there, I didn't dare cave. I was like, it has to be no. And it was absolutely right, because we left that dealership. I didn't buy that vehicle. I bought a much better vehicle later. But it's absolutely true. I don't believe there's any deal, like if it's a sensible deal that both parties want, there's never anybody who's going to say, actually, I just need like, just give me 1 minute to think about it. So if you're ever feeling bounced or rushed or pressured, just say no. Don't even think about it. Just, if it has to be now, it has to be no, and think about it. And I think in today's world in particular, we're less and less good at dealing with conflict and challenge, especially when we are in real life in the moment. It, you know, we're so used to talking on Zoom or on phones where it's very easy or relatively easy to disconnect. But I think as a CFO, it's really important to have the confidence to say no, to do it with respect and empathy, but don't dance around it. Like, clarity and conviction are really key qualities of a finance leader, because that's what allows you to lead with consistency. And that's what the organization needs from you.
If it has to be now, it has to be no. That's so wise. I'm going to take away an awful lot from our conversation today, but that one there, I can guarantee I'll be using several times this week. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And then finally, at the end of each of our conversations here on CFO Playbook, we like to ask a parting question. We call it our showstopper question, Liz. And in this series, we're asking our guests to give us their reflection on a phrase, and that phrase is progressive finance. So, Liz, what does progressive finance conjure up for you?
To me, progressive finance is about change. And how do you make the finance function a force for change in the organization? How do you make finance be at the front end of decisioning, actually leading the way, rather than being after the fact and, you know, can you just record these transactions in the ledgers? But how are you leading from the front in what decisions should we be making? What decisions are we making? Where are we heading? How does finance lead the way on AI adoption or anything else in cutting edge tools, smart methods to support the organization and help everybody else then to be on the front foot and move faster?
Thank you for leading the way today, Liz. It's been great to speak with you, and I wish you every success at Motorway for 2026 and beyond. Liz Kistruck, thank you for joining us on the CFO Playbook.
Thank you very much.
And don't forget to join us every month here on the CFO Playbook for more insights from finance leaders. But for now, from me, David McClelland, until next time, bye-bye.